From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com, you're listening to The Brian and Vinny Show with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny V.
And Craig. Alrighty, it's Brian and Vinny Show, everybody. October 20, 2015, figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. Haven't been here for a while. A week now. No Vinny for a week. Man.
Smiling every day.
Well, enjoy your last smile for a while, Vinny.
Why is that?
Well, we decided this week to try something new.
And improved.
Which was, you're so excited, Vinny. You know where this is going.
I do, and I'm going to ignore you.
Well,
I am in denial.
We decided...
Hi, buddy. Craig's got me on Periscope. I'm in a good mood. How you doing, man?
We decided this week that instead of watching the regular Raw, because I already recap it on Monday, and it's redundant to do this two nights in a row.
Yeah.
Then instead we would do Retro Tuesdays.
That's right. This is a great idea. It's a theme.
We would have Retro Raw and Retro Nitro on the same night. Thursday we would have Network Night, which would mean we would watch NXT and
any
whatever
other
else.
Other network stuff.
Sure.
Dinner for Three.
Very popular.
Randomly,
that Dinner for Three.
I randomly turned on the network today, and the live stream was showing the Rivalries episode of Matt Hardy versus Edge. The 10 minutes I watched were great.
Yeah.
We can watch that sometime.
And then Sunday would be whatever day, Ring of Honor, New Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was a pretty good idea.
It is a great idea.
Well, unfortunately, we have listeners.
And every single one of these listeners personally contacted you?
Well, not every one of them.
No.
But...
Eight.
But... It has been an overwhelmingly negative response, Vinny.
They haven't even given it a chance.
Well, that's the thing. We're going to try this today.
That's right.
We're going to try this today.
And next week.
And we will see...
And the week after.
...what the response is. If it's a failure, Vinny, somebody on the board pointed out that we've tried this twice now. Twice it has failed.
I don't recall this.
I don't know why everybody likes it. Actually, I do. I'll say this.
They hate me.
Well, that's part of it. When I announced this... I was immediately bombarded with people who just said, your idea sucks. So I immediately said, listen, if you would like to explain why you think this idea sucks, beyond you don't like change, I will be willing to listen to why we should do Raw two nights in a row. And yes, Vinny, there were a lot of people that just want to hear you rant about Raw.
Yeah, they like my mental instability,
yes.
The emotional carnage it wrecks on my soul, the damage it's doing to my spirit and heart.
It is cathartic to them.
Yeah, for them.
Yes.
It many sucks people, for me.
Many people brought this up. And they also said, Vinny, which you're not going to care about, but this is a positive.
I'll hear.
A lot of people said, you know what? There's a million podcasts. And there's a million Raw reviews. Mm-hmm. And the Raw review on the Brian and Vinny Show
is, a positive?
Is the best one.
I see.
They said they enjoy it more than the recap that we do on Observer Radio. They enjoy it more than any other Raw recap on the internet.
Hmm.
So if it turns out that that is the majority opinion, we'll go back to reviewing Raw here on this show.
Does it have to be on Tuesdays?
Yes.
No.
Are you going to do it on Thursday?
Actually, yes.
Well, then Craig won't be involved.
So?
What does Craig care about? Craig is here for the company.
We'll discuss that. But...
You know, that's a good point. It's irrelevant, because my goal over the next 60-plus minutes is to entertain you, the listener, so greatly that you will demand...
But the problem, Vinny, is...
That we do Retro Raw and Nitro every week.
Many people mentioned that they don't enjoy it when you love the show.
Yeah, I know. They hate me.
No. They enjoy you eviscerating a show.
But I'm eviscerating it because I'm angry and upset. Therefore, they want me to be angry and upset.
I'm just telling you what people say, Vinny.
I'm drawing the obvious conclusions to what they say.
Well, I'm sure that's part of it.
Yeah. And I don't... Listen, I'm not mad at them. I get that. But it makes my life worse.
Hey, Raw makes everybody's life
worse. It does. Raw is a terrible
thing.
This
is not just your problem here.
Raw is up there with herpes as far as making lives worse. But there's a cure. We can stop watching.
Yeah.
There's no. You can't turn the channel on the herp.
See how it goes. You know what? The other thing that confused me was people said, oh, man, you can't get rid of the Raw recap because I need to hear Vinny ranting about something. And all I thought was, that's the only thing Vinny's going to rant about? He's not going to rant about Raw from 1996, which is a much worse show than 2015
by
Raw.
By and large, as far as actual quality,
not this
yes.
week. This week was actually a pretty good show. But in general, the Raw from 1996 is so much worse than 2015 Raw. You want to hear Vinny complain? That's the show you should be listening to.
We did not review it, but because you were in California. But I did watch the Raw from the week before this, the main event of Shawn Michaels versus Steve Austin, which I realize sounds great. That show was useless.
It was a terrible show.
That was a god-awful
I did
wrestling
review
show.
It.
Yeah.
It was very, very bad.
It was so bad.
All right, well, we'll see what happens.
What's going to happen, Brian, is I'm going to rock the world.
Vinny, you may not want to.
I am.
That's the opposite of what you want to do.
Hmm.
Yeah. Think about that.
Now I'm confused. My tiny brain is not working.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to start with Raw tonight, and then we'll go to Nitro, and we'll see how it goes.
Which is also a good show.
Yeah.
So, yes, Raw number 180, October 21st, 1996. The first show after the Buried Alive pay-per-view. Opened with Psycho Sid versus Owen Hart. As threatened, Vince McMahon was back on commentary. He announced that Sid had defeated Vader at the pay-per-view, and now he would face Shawn Michaels for the title at Survivor Series. So they had a match here, Owen Hart and Sid did, but that's not important. The most important thing were the two most disturbing signs I've ever seen on a wrestling show, and think of the ground that covers. This is 96, by the way. No one had ever mentioned the word attitude before. At least not as far as an attitude era. But some fan took it upon himself, and I noticed this on Raw and Nitro. I don't know if this is when they started putting the big screens in the arena, but the fans knew when they were on camera and they were trying to get on TV. So this fan knew he was on camera, and he held up a sign that read, and I quote, "Hump his face gold dust." I know some of you are thinking I'm making a mistake here. That perhaps the sign was in low resolution or a tiny corner of the screen. No, I went back to check because I at first thought it said hump my face, which would be even more disturbing. But no, somebody held up a sign, hump his face gold dust. And then later I saw, and I believe it was the same person because it was in the same spot of the arena, slip it to him gold dust.
Yeah.
What show did this person think they were going to?
Raw.
I guess.
Have you been watching Goldust lately? Have we talked about Goldust's outfit?
Yes.
We have.
He never slipped it to anyone.
There was a sign very...
That I saw. Very
similar to that on... I don't know if it was an NXT show. It may have been one of the takeovers. Some girl wanted Finn to hump her face.
Yeah, that was on the internet.
It was on the internet?
It was on Twitter.
Well, I mean, it must have been at a show.
It was in the building.
Yeah. It occurred at a show.
I think it was Mankind's first book when he wrote, he was very disturbed when he looked down from his hotel room. There were adoring fans on the sidewalk. And one of the young ladies says, I want more than Mankind's sock in my mouth.
Wow. Did you guys watch a Stone Cold podcast?
No, but it led to the best thread in board history. And B-O-R-E-D, board.
At one point... They're talking about rats.
Oh, really?
But not in those words.
Mm-hmm.
They're being very, very careful to use words like stimulation. And they are howling.
This is better than rats?
It was way better. It was way better because they were both trying so hard not to talk about what they both knew the other was talking about.
Uh-huh.
As did I and maybe others. It was unbelievable.
That's tremendous.
Let's talk about how bad Sid was.
Sid sucked.
Sid was so bad during this match. We have compared Sid to Frankenstein.
Mm. Yes.
Frankenstein's monster for you geeks out there. Frankenstein's monster would have been a way better wrestler than Sid. Frankenstein's monster was dead. He had giant shoes, which would have made it very difficult to work.
Mismatched body parts.
Mismatched body
Everything
parts.
Everything not fitting together.
That's kind of like Sid.
It actually is.
But yeah, he was so bad. There was a spot where Owen...
The dropkick?
He did something off the top, and Sid just sat down.
It was a drizzle dropkick.
Sid that was his bump.
By dropping to his ass and rolling to his back. And they rewarded this man with a main event a few weeks later.
You know what was amazing about it was, the best part of this match was when he was selling. And keep in mind, Sid can't sell.
No.
But because all he had to do was lay on the mat and grunt,
yeah,
it was the best part of the match.
Sid's selling is much better than his striking. I won't say better than his offense, because he has some cool power moves, but his punches...
He does.
His chokeslam is cool.
So he's got one move.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, this is the first time I've actually watched a retro Raw on the network. It's been a long, long time since I've watched a Raw back in the day.
Well, don't get your hopes up, because this was the best one we've watched in 2 months.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
By a
wide, wide margin.
That's,
this show is terrible.
That's saddening to me. I didn't realize how cartoony it was in 96. Even Vince McMahon on the mic sounds like a morning radio DJ.
Yeah.
You don't even know, buddy. You don't even know. Go back just for fun and watch last week's show.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
That is an example of Raw in 1996.
The mystery is not how Nitro won 80-some weeks or whatever it was. Mystery is how this company survived.
Yeah.
Their show in 96 was shorter.
And they were doing terribly in 1996, yeah, business-wise.
Yes.
And this was their response. Maybe if we have more men coming out with hogs,
yeah,
that will turn the show around.
So Owen and Goldust are doing this match, and Davey Boy came out at one point.
Sid.
What did I say?
Goldust.
I'm sorry.
I know you have Goldust on your mind a lot, Vinny.
And face humping. So Owen and Sid are doing a match, and Davey Boy comes out to distract Sid and then just blatantly interfere right in front of the ref, and he didn't care. And they worked over Sid's leg for a while. And
there was an amazing spot where Owen goes for a high cross after Sid's been selling for a long time, and the entire spot is Sid catches him on the high cross and then drops him.
Yeah.
Doesn't slam him.
No.
Doesn't lift him up and thrust him into the mat. He just... grabs him and drops him, and the place goes crazy.
He just let go and let gravity take care of whatever happened next. Yeah, and that's the other key. Audiences have changed, because when Sid made his comeback, and as we've noted, Sid had the worst punches in wrestling history. But this place loved Sid. He's wailing on Owen with these terrible strikes, and they're all jumping to their feet and pumping their fists. And Owen, by the way, part of him, I guess, just wanted to get the best possible match out of Sid. So I think he went up to Sid and said, Sid, your punches suck. So when you're making your comeback, swing your arm like you normally do, but just keep an open hand and slap me in the face. Because Sid was slapping him in the face over and over again. And as slaps, on a scale of 1 to 10, they were a 3. As punches, they would have been a 0. So Sid makes his comeback. He hits a chokeslam, and the place goes bonkers. They're so excited for Sid. And he sets him up for the powerbomb, and Davey Boy interferes with the DQ. The two heels are working over when Shawn Michaels runs out to make the save.
Shawn Michaels, after watching Sid, should have been an Olympian. Shawn Michaels ran so fast to the ring that when he slid inside, he could not control his own body.
No.
He's slipping all over the place.
He's wearing street shoes.
Trying desperately to get to his feet.
Yeah.
And he helps clear the ring. One other thing about Owen. Owen was a ribber.
Yes.
I don't know if he was ribbing during this match. But after a while, he just started throwing the worst punches and kicks of all time. Like, I don't know if he just decided, this match is, I've tried, and it's failing.
Yes.
So now, let's just have a bad match. And he started throwing these punches and kicks that were hideous. And Owen Hart was awesome. So this had to have been done on purpose. There's no other explanation.
Either that or whatever Sid has is contagious. And Owen caught it.
Unfortunately, he wrestled most of the roster.
Yes. We talked about how terrible the show was. So Shawn makes a save. They clear the ring. Now, I don't know. Was there earlier this year, in 1996, was there a Shawn and Sid reconciliation? Because...
Well, there was one last week. Remember they high-fived and they chest-bumped?
I guess so. That's true.
All I know is that
friends again.
Sean is explaining to Sid. Sid does not understand why Sean saved him.
They clear the ring, and they shake hands, but Sid's like, I appreciate your help, but I don't need it next time.
And Sean is explaining, Frankenstein, there's two of them and one of you.
Yeah.
And Sid goes, oh. That's his response.
You're not wrong. Yeah, somehow, and they didn't have mics, by the way. We couldn't hear anything they said. Through body language alone, we both got the message of what they were trying to convey. So they came to some kind of an agreement. They fist bumped, and Sean left. So they're still pals. We had still shots of the buried alive match between Mankind and Undertaker. A match I don't think I ever saw, and I'm not in a hurry to. So Taker seemed to have the match won. He was about to bury Mankind alive when the Executioner debuted. That would be Terry Gordy under a mask. He broke a shovel over Taker's head.
They get Terry Gordy, and he becomes the Executioner.
Sure. They have never been shy about reinventing everybody.
Can you reinvent someone with a good gimmick?
Well,
he was the Executioner. His gimmick was he puts you to death.
I'm trying to think of anyone who got reinvented with a good gimmick. Does Lex Luger count?
Mr. Perfect.
All right, there you go. Anyway, so yes, they put Taker in the grave, and about a half dozen heels came out to help bury him. And then there was some kind of pyro display, and the show ended with Taker's purple glove reaching out from the dirt. Smoking Guns versus the Godwins.
This was where Hog and Pig came out with legit bovines.
Bovine is a cow, Brian.
These were pigs.
Povines. I don't know.
I'm trying to remember the word for hooked mammal.
Swine. Piglets. Dromedaries.
Ungulate. That's it.
An ungulate.
Yeah. So, a few weeks back, they came out with a goat. And I think I can spoil this. Lance Storm was incensed that the pig farmers would have a goat.
This is
bad booking.
They're farmers. They're allowed to have a second animal.
Don't blame me. So Pig and Hog come out with their pigs. They have pigs. They put them on the announce desk. And one of them, and I have no reason to doubt this, but one of them apparently peed on Jerry Lawler. Mm-hmm. They were also squealing quite a bit. And eventually they took the pigs backstage.
I swear they piped that in.
The pig squealing?
Yeah.
Entirely possible.
I'm almost positive.
So they're doing this match. And the gimmick was the Smoking Guns had lost in the pay-per-view. I forget who to. But they're having troubles because Bart's focused on winning. Billy is focused on porking Sonny.
Porking?
Porking, yeah.
Pig farmers.
Yeah. So.
Vinny's funny sometimes.
Once in a while. So they're not getting along. They low bridge Phineas for the heat, but then all their double teams fail and they bonk into each other and they're falling down. And Henry gets the hot tag. And we have mentioned this, how much we did not appreciate Henry Godwin. When we were 20, Henry Godwin was a great, big, thick, scary man who could move.
Sure.
Maybe it's because they put him in coveralls and made him a pig farmer.
It could have been because they hogged farms, or they farmed hogs,
yes,
or whatever they did.
This may make it hard to take him seriously. But I'm watching him here today and thinking, Jesus Christ, look at this guy.
You know, usually I could see through bad gimmicks.
Uh-huh.
Could not see through this bad gimmick.
This is a very bad gimmick.
This one was impossible to see through.
Remember when he first showed up and his music was just pigs oinking?
Yeah. You know, it's also possible he did follow Sid.
There is that. There is that. So they whipped Bart into the ropes. Bart collided with Billy and knocked him off the apron. And they hit Bart with the slop drop and pinned him. And the Smoking Guns are having an argument afterwards. And Vince begins to plug the Hall of Fame. And he says, the Smoking Guns at this rate, neither of them likely to make it to the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Burial.
Wow.
And the funny thing is, at some point, I'm sure Billy will be, one way or another.
Speaking of Billy.
Yes.
He's put on, what, 70, 80 pounds since 96?
They did mention that Ross, his sources told him that the winning team tonight might get a WWE championship match.
Might.
Sources.
Keep in mind, the Smoking Guns lost a tag team championship match the night before.
And it's not like they have a huge tag team roster.
No, this roster is wanting.
This ain't 1988.
So either the Cowboys
the pig farmers,
or the pig farmers are going to be number one contenders. Possible.
For the Englishman and the Canadian.
I mean, from what we've determined here, it will be the Godwins. The pig farmers.
I see.
I'm trying to think if there's any other teams that we've watched in the past few weeks. None are coming out. None are sticking out to me.
Al Snow and Marty Jannetty.
They're new rockers. New rockers. I think we did see the...
God, you should have seen Al Snow back then.
He's also put on about 70 pounds.
We saw the body Donna's at
one
point.
He had no idea what he was doing in the ring.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he could do a whole bunch of moves, but he had no idea what he was doing. Very much like us at that exact same time.
Well, except his paychecks were a smidge bigger.
So they announced Pat Patterson, Jimmy Snuka, and Vince Sr. for the Hall of Fame. Yes, in November.
It's good to see that the founder of the WWE made it into their Hall of Fame.
It does seem reasonable, doesn't it? They showed Mr. Perfect warming up backstage when Hunter Hearst Helmsley rammed a cart into his leg.
Hunter put on 80 pounds.
At least. Yeah, I didn't even notice. I mean, I guess thinking about it now, I do with Billy's growth, but we'll talk about Hunter later. But yes, he's smaller.
He looks like his own little brother.
Right.
He's the before picture. And there's Charles Atlas.
He's the one getting sand kicked in his face on the beach and his girlfriend being stolen.
I would say this. His arms were so skinny.
Dude, give it a year when they do the DX segment backstage with him and China and Sean.
Yes, and he's the smallest one there.
And he's got the smallest arms.
Yes. Yeah, things change.
Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. He was significantly larger than Triple H at one point. So here he rams a cart into Perfect's leg, and Perfect goes down, he grabs his knee, he just barely gets out of, God damn it! Right on camera. And Hunter smiled and he left. He showed Stone Cold Steve Austin yelling at Todd Pettengill and Sonny on Livewire. That sounds like buys. I'd watch that show. Jim Ross called out Bret Hart for a promo.
This was the best thing on any of the retro Raws that we've watched yet.
Light years.
You know what's funny is, I couldn't say it word for word right now, but I knew every single thing that he said in this interview by heart as I watched it. I am pretty sure that I was so blown away by this interview when it first occurred that I rewound the videotape and transcribed it word for word in the newsletter.
That's possible.
I'll bet you anything, if you went back, you'd find this transcript.
That's quite possible.
This was the greatest interview.
The thing about Brett was he was not the most... Well, the most electrifying speaker. He was not like The Rock, obviously. He was not Dusty Rhodes or Hulk Hogan. But when he spoke, there was a gravity and a believability.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, mainly because almost everything he said here was, in fact, it was pretty much a fact. But yes, everything he said seemed real and important. So, this was his first appearance in a ring on TV since he had lost the title to Shawn Michaels at Mania about 6 months earlier. Vince is there on commentary saying, "We have no idea what he's going to say or do." As if there was ever a possibility.
Given he'd already signed.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Exactly. That. Like, Vince would have put him in the ring if he didn't know what was going to happen.
I will say that when they played his music and he went down to the ring, just his music and him going to the ring made this seem like an important show.
That's true. That is true. So, Brett acknowledges that in his time away, a rival wrestling organization had made him a great offer. They dealt with him with integrity, in an honorable fashion. He had nothing bad to say about them.
And Vince on commentary just goes, "I can't believe this is happening."
Yeah, I don't like where this is going. And he admits he did not know if he was going to come back to the... Or he had not known if he was coming back to the WWF or finding a new adventure somewhere else.
You know, some numbskull is going to misinterpret what I'm about to say because it happens on every single show. But I don't care because this is just a fact. This build to Montreal is the greatest angle ever, but it wasn't an angle.
Right.
It's incredible. This is a full year. This is 13 months before Montreal, and Brett is doing this promo, and Vince is sitting there, and he's gritting his teeth, and Brett's talking about how he's made this deal to come back, and the competition, and Vince can't believe it's just incredible. When you watch this over the next year, You're going to be astonished at how this all fits together into Montreal. And it's all real.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Vince was... I wonder what the point was where Vince went backstage and he went, you know what? This Bret Hart fella is like a real guy doing a real promo that feels completely real. And the fans sure seem to like it more than these damn hog farmers. Wonder when he figured it out.
There was a point, and I've heard many, many guys talk about it, including Sean, Hunter, and I think Austin, where Vince basically admitted that what they were doing was not working, and they're going to do a more realistic product. And that's when Hunter Hearst Helmsley became Triple H, because Hunter is not actually a snob from Connecticut. And DX started around there, and that
thing... It took him that long?
Yes.
Well, he should have figured it out tonight.
You would think. Let's see. They showed all the heels watching backstage. The key is Steve Austin had been campaigning for a match with Bret for months. So he's back there. Owen might have been back there. Pillman is back there. Three or four other guys. And then standing there in the background, barely on camera, Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
The Rock. And I just checked. He didn't even make his debut for another month. And when he did, he was a babyface. What was he doing there?
I only needed a body.
I guess. You were the sideburns. Come stand here. Because I saw him and I thought, that can't have been The Rock. And I went back and it's The Rock. So, Bret explains that he had had a difficult decision, but everything he had in his life, he owed to his WWF fans, and he was not going anywhere. He said, and I quote, I'll be with the WWF forever.
This angle.
It's stupid.
And it's not.
There are times watching this where I'm just cringing, knowing how it all played out. So Vince is relieved and he clapped. All right. So Bret says Sean had beaten him fair and square. He made no excuses. He said he considered Sean his opponent, not his enemy. But he admitted there was something about Sean that bugged him. Said Sean might be younger, more popular, maybe even cuter. He was a great wrestler and a great champion, but he knew Sean would never be as tough as Bret or as smart as Bret.
And Vince is like, well, I'm not sure that's the case. I'm like, oh yeah? You think Shawn Michaels may be tougher than Bret Hart? Craig?
Bret went on to say, Craig is, I'm not going to argue with you.
He's biting his tongue right here. Shawn Michaels was super tough. He just posed in Playgirl. It's nothing.
Go back and watch Mania
14 with Austin.
Thank you.
They got in a fight, buddy. And Bret beat his ass.
Didn't say, but never said, toughness and being a good fighter are not the same thing.
By the way,
In
which Bret ripped Sean's hair out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah.
I'm sure that Sean was just going to do the fisticuffs and Bret grabbed his hair.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if you asked Sean, he would tell you that Bret was way tougher than he was.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, but still.
And to be honest, you'd probably say Bret was way smarter, too.
Bret came up in the dungeon. Sean came up with Jose Lothario doing flips.
In Mexico.
And I love Shawn Michaels. Wasn't in Mexico, either.
Yeah, I know. Bret went on to say that he doesn't dance too well, and he doesn't pose for girly books, but he'll be a role model for kids watching at home.
Yes, he... First he accepted Austin's challenge. He said, I'm going to accept the challenge of the best wrestler... And he said wrestler in the WWF today.
Well, that was okay back then, Vinny.
Was it? I'd forgotten.
Yes.
Forgotten when it was banned. Still, though, Shawn Michaels is the champion. Here's Bret calling Steve Austin the best wrestler. He says, I will face Stone Cold Steve Austin at the Survivor Series. And they cut backstage where Brian Pillman begins to mark out.
Mm-hmm.
He's pumping his fist. He's jumping up and down. He's giggling. And Austin turns around like, calm down, you fool. And it worked.
He just gave him a death stare.
What the fuck are you doing? And Pillman calmed down. And then Bret talks about his fans all over the world, how he wants to be the role model. And he tells the true story of his young nephew who fell ill. And
flesh-eating disease.
Yeah. Yeah, and tragically passed away. And he acknowledged that his story did not have a happy ending, but he said he still wanted to be a role model for children everywhere. And that's when he had his line about not dancing or posing for girly books.
Girly books.
His the nephew that passed away, that was Teddy's brother,
Matthew,
right?
Annis.
I forget, but yes. But, yeah, and he said he was the best there is, was, never will be, and I'm back. And that was that, and that was great.
All-time great promo right there.
It really was.
All-time great promo. And yes, this wasn't really a build for Montreal. What was a build for was Mania.
It was a build for Survivor Series and their plan for Mania the next year. But yes, regardless, it made you want to see both those matches.
Yeah.
And it made you want to... It gave you a reason to care about this Bret Hart fella and if he won or lost and succeeded or failed.
It was awesome.
They plugged the Karate Fighters Tournament. If you were not watching in 1996, they didn't actually do a karate tournament. The Karate Fighters were these wacky toys where you put them on a little gizmo and spun them around and one of them fell off and that person lost. But they're going over the different characters they had. They say there's four different fighters and six sets of weapons. And Lawler says, the possibilities are endless. False. There are 24 possibilities.
Well, you know, that's almost endless.
This led to Triple H versus Mr. Perfect. So Hunter comes out. And then Perfect comes out limping in his workout jacket. He's accompanied by Mark Mero, Sable, and Gorilla Monsoon. And Perfect cuts a promo. He says, the whole world saw what you did, Helmsley. You tried to take me out, but I'm going to wrestle. And Gorilla steps in and says, no, no. The doctors have checked you out. You are not cleared to compete. I won't allow it. Hunter starts to mock Perfect, calls him a chicken.
A chicken? What are you, a chicken?
You have no guts? Perfect says, listen.
I'm no chicken.
He said, I'm no chicken. So I talked to Mark Mero. He's a stand-up guy, and he has volunteered to wrestle in my place. Hunter says, no, no, no. I have a contract to wrestle Mr. Perfect. I don't have a contract to wrestle Mark Mero. I am not going to take any part of this. Unless you put your Intercontinental title on the line. And he makes this challenge, and before Mero can say anything, Perfect says, of course I'll put his title on the line. And he turns to Mero and says, what kind of champion are you? So, we'll never know what Mero would have said, but now he had no choice but to accept this challenge and to put his championship on the line.
What was amazing about this is, if you've ever watched Gorilla Monsoon do commentary, he's always going to be right.
Yes.
He's just like Larry. So, they do an angle where Hunter wants to wrestle Mark Mero. Hunter challenges him. He says, I don't have a contract to wrestle Mark Mero, but I will wrestle Mark Mero as long as he puts his title on the line. And Mr. Perfect goads Mark Mero into saying, yes, I will put my title on the line. So, Hunter has accepted the match under his terms. Mero has accepted the match under his terms. Both men have accepted the match, and Gorilla Monsoon has to jump in and say, well, hold on a second. I have not sanctioned this match. I will not sanction this match unless both men agree to it. Hunter, do you agree to this match? Hunter's like, yeah, if the title's on the line. Mero, do you agree? Yeah. All right, the match is on.
Yes.
Like, you fucker.
Had to get his screen time in there.
You had to get that in there. You had to show that you were in charge. And you made this match.
You know, I'm actually okay with it because it did in fact make the whole thing official.
It was already official. My point is, all he had to say was, all right, the match is made.
That's true.
Instead, he had to...
He didn't make them repeat what they had said.
You know what it was? It was the Raw report on Tuesday. It was redundant. It was unneeded.
Yes. So we got Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Mark Mero. When you think of Mark Mero, or at least when I think of him, I tend to think of him in the marvelous Mark Mero phase and the feud with Sable, with Jackie, where he was doing the boxer gimmick. And that Mark Mero, let's be honest, pretty much sucked. This Mark Mero was an athlete. Before he tore up his knee, this dude could move, and he looked good tonight. This was awesome. He teased a dive. Hunter pulled Sable in front of him. So Sable slapped him and Mero lit into him on the floor. And finally Hunter took over. And it was a flashback, obviously, to 1996. And if you were not watching Triple H then, it was comedy. I swear to God, half of his offense was just hit him with his knee. Put him on the ground, do a knee drop. Pull him up, do a knee lift. Throw him on the ropes, do a jumping knee. It was comedy. Miro made his comeback. He went up top. Hunter pushed the ref into the ropes and Miro got crotched. Then Miro hit a moonsault body press for a near fall. The ref got bumped. And Hunter goes to grab a chair. He gets in the ring with a chair. And Sable stops him from swinging it. And then Pervert shows up and takes it from both of them. And then, of course, in a move that surprised Vince McMahon and perhaps nobody else, he hit Mark Miro with a chair. And Miro goes down. Pervert leaves. Sable leaves, screaming, but still leaves.
She was amazing. She was trying to get the rest's attention. She was animated and screaming and jumping up and down and absolutely losing her mind. I believed this woman.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I'll tell you what was great about this. How many times have we seen this stupid finish in the last 5 years?
Many.
A million times.
Might have saw it on Monday.
Or any finish that involves screw job. You still have to watch the Hulu version, Vinny. That was our agreement.
At some point, I agreed to watch the Hulu version.
That's right. Now, the reason this was great was because normally the screw job occurs and the man is immediately pinned.
Mm-hmm.
Not this time. Mr. Perfect hits Mark Mero. Mero goes down. The referee is still recovering. Triple H, of course, because it's Triple H, always has to hit
his
move.
Yes, mm-hmm. This is what I noted.
He can't just pin a guy. He's got to do his move.
Do you remember about 5 years ago, Hunter and Orton had a match on pay-per-view? And like a minute in, Orton took a bad bump and broke his collarbone.
Yes.
And Hunter still had him with a hammer?
Of course. Yeah. Hunter always has to hit his move. So
he hits his move.
Point of this is, not only does he hit the move, but Mero is down. The ref is down. The ref is slowly getting to his feet. Sable is screaming. She's shrieking. The announcers are freaking out. The announcers are screaming. Hunter very slowly and methodically picks the man up, his dead body. He sets him up
form.
For the pedigree. He looks around at the crowd. He very dramatically hits the pedigree. He slowly turns the man over. He finally covers him, and the referee slowly counts the pin. Point of this is, they built up drama. They built up a ton of drama. This 15 seconds felt like 5 years to all of those Mark Mero fans. To all the fans that hated Triple H and loved Mark Mero and Sable, this was so dastardly, and they got so much out of it. As opposed to today, where it's somebody screws somebody, boom, immediately pinned, and it's over.
Yeah.
There's no drama.
You're correct about that. And the other thing that separates this from every screw job now is I understand from the get-go why Perfect and Helmsley have this elaborate plot. Their plan was, if we work together, we can screw Mero and gain the Intercontinental Championship. You'll have a championship. I'll be managing you. We'll be a great team. Here's our plan. And it went from there. Screw jobs usually these days are because they have nothing else to do.
Yes, this was set up very, very well. Although it did involve them punching each other in the face, like on last week's Raw.
One punch.
Yeah.
One bump. He's tough. He can take that. You got to...
Tougher than Sean.
Apparently.
I wish that was periscoped. Craig rolling his eyes when I said tougher than Sean. Listen, I love Sean and everything. He's Hacksaw Jim Duggan now, Craig. Did you watch Raw?
Yeah.
He's Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Well, I watched most of it.
He's Hacksaw Duggan. Nothing wrong with the guy.
You're not selling me on this Raw, by the way.
He's still the best of all time. No, it's just funny to watch Sean come out nowadays.
He's got his hat.
He's got his hat, the eye. He basically says, "Whoa!"
Just the one, though.
You know.
Got his jeans tucked into his boots like it's the 80s.
He's still the best of all time, but he's turning into Jim Duggan. Anyway, as much as I praise that, as soon as he won the belt, it was to the back and the show was over.
Mm-hmm.
No time for it to sink in.
That is true.
We had to think about it when we watched Nitro.
So that was a much better show than any of the retro Raws we have watched in the past.
So they're about to get good.
Yes.
You better hope so.
2 or 3 months, whatever it's been since Lucha Underground went off the air.
All right, let's play a quick song, and then we shall do Nitro. One of these days, it'll play.
We had a great segment backstage. William Regal welcomes us to his office. Looks in the camera and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to my office here in NXT. I am joined by Dana Brooke and Emma. I've f***ed them to be here." And Regal was so unbelievably great in this segment. He is the best commissioner in the world. He was fantastic. So he explains to them, last week, you came out and made a spectacle of yourselves.
The hell's with your audio?
You ruined my signing with Asuka. You embarrassed her and you embarrassed me. And they laughed about this and said, yeah, we did. She ran out of the ring with a t- between her legs and she gave us that smile. She smiles like a hyena. So he says, I've got something to show you. And it is apparently footage of Asuka being in Japan. And he holds his laptop up so they can see it, but we can't.
Yes.
And we hear screams. We hear grunts and groans.
Could
we,
have been faces of d-
it might have been. We hear flesh striking other flesh. There's and on the screen. And we can only imagine what Asuka's doing to these poor women in these Japanese rings. And slowly, a look of desperate terror comes over the face of Emma and Dana. And Emma can finally only bring herself to say, good luck.
There you go.
All right, that started slow.
Yeah.
But it finished strong.
All righty. Nitro.
Nitro, number 58, also October 21st, 1996. You see, it's a theme.
How about that?
It's a theme we do here on these Monday nights.
Tuesday.
I am thinking of taking all of next year off so that then we could just do 20 years ago this week. We'll talk about that later. I don't need to hit the fans up with any more change.
Yeah.
This change thing is very distressing.
They've already had their feathers ruffled. So let me get settled. So Larry Zbyszko opens the show with an impassioned plea to Randy Savage. And this is not an exact quote, but it's close. He warns him, do not let your ex-wife back into your life so she can take all your money again. And all I can say is that this sounded like a man who knew of what he spoke. This sounded near to Larry's heart. Bobby Eaton versus Chris Jericho. No more Earl of Eaton. He was out of the Blue Bloods. He's back to being beautiful Bobby.
Because it was very important to wrap up that storyline.
Apparently not. They mentioned that he got kicked out, and he's back now.
Can you imagine? They did a storyline to kick Bobby Eaton, who never did anything, out of the Blue Bloods, where he would continue to never do anything.
Still do nothing.
Oddly enough, Tony...
Why do they bother?
Oddly enough, Tony said he actually had been divorced from the Blue Bloods, was his actual word.
Okay.
Divorced. They were just talking about Savage.
It doesn't mean they were married.
I understand that, Brian. Just putting an exclamation point on the Savage and Liz thing.
I see.
So, Fake, Sting, and Six show up in the crowd. They have an NWO banner, and they're just standing there. And they did introductions for the match, and they're about to wrestle. And Patrick comes over to Jericho and says something. And Jericho looks right into the camera, and you can tell he is highly, highly, highly annoyed. And then they go to commercial. I'm sure that what happened was they did a commercial break and didn't tell the wrestlers they'd be doing one. So Jericho comes out there. He's all hyped and ready to go and has to be told, now you stand in this corner for 4 minutes.
The best thing about where Fake Sting and Xbox were, right as they come out of the...
Who?
I'm sorry, Six.
What do you call them?
Xbox.
Xbox.
Oh,
that's much better.
Actually, Xbox would be better than X-Pac. Because then at least it sounds like a dread disease.
I see. Anyway,
he's got Xbox. He ain't going to make it.
Everything itches. Anyway, they come out of their, for lack of a better term, hole in the wall. Excuse me. And it says NWO over there. And they're right there in the stands. And in front of them is a middle-aged lady and her elderly father, probably in his 80s.
Yes.
No hair, in a wheelchair, feverishly eating popcorn, and has no time for the skinny geek behind him.
Are you sure this wasn't Hulk Hogan?
I'm positive.
All right, we'll get to him.
No, I can verify what Craig is saying. I saw the man as well.
Did you see Hulk Hogan?
Well, yeah.
How can a man have hair and look older?
Dude, he looked 100.
Yeah.
You know how old he was at the time?
40-something?
43.
Yes. I just turned 40.
43.
43, right here.
Yeah. We'll get to the Hulkster.
He was in better shape than you, Craig. I'll give him that.
I have better hair.
Not on this one.
No, mine's
real. They've given him a wig.
Mine's real.
He looked like... I don't know what he looked like. Father Time.
So, The commercial break ends. The bell rings. They all just stand there. The bell rings again. Nick Patrick checks with somebody and says, okay, wrestle.
Patrick was back to being a complete idiot ref this week.
Right.
As we'll get to. Although it wasn't his fault later.
So the gimmick here was they did not have this commercial break planned out for the wrestlers or the referee or the announcers. And then they didn't know for sure when they were back on the air. This is all pretty subtle. And it would, you may not have noticed if you were just sitting on your couch drinking a beer watching the show. But WCW was never not WCW.
By the way, how come they have two announce teams? They have one for hour one, and they have one for hour two, right?
Mm-hmm.
The hour two crew is way back in the middle of nowhere in a big fancy set.
Mm-hmm.
And they thrust Shivani and Larry into two little chairs at ringside.
Right.
Why?
I don't have an answer.
Like they're in Ring of Honor or something.
Yeah.
I think they just want nothing to do with Larry. So get him as far away from us as possible.
That might be.
Did Heenan and Zbyszko have heat? I'm asking a question.
I don't know.
Because if there were two
Heenan
people,
and Mongo had heat, they had to work together for a year.
Yeah, and it was spectacular television. Just saying.
So they had a fun match.
Can we get through this goddamn match?
They did a bunch of mat wrestling. They did some brawling on the floor.
Jericho won and it was boring.
Heenan took a backdrop on the floor. They traded some big moves. Jericho won with a missile dropkick. Everyone remember those words?
Yes.
Missile dropkick. So Jericho wins. I also like, by the way, Jericho was throwing these overhand slaps to the chest, and he's throwing them as hard as he can to try to make the loudest noise possible, of course, and then his aim is off on one, and one of them catches Eaton right in the face.
Yeah.
Bad times. So the gimmick for this show was the winner would get to do an interview with Tony Schiavone on the floor. So Schiavone's interview...
What a win.
That doesn't sound like much of a prize, I realize. So Schiavone, or Jericho notes... Six is watching up in the stands, and in 6 days, I'm going to take him apart. The NWO is undefeated. I'm going to be the first man from WCW to get a win over the NWO when I face Six of Halloween Havoc.
That was a good one.
I just like when he had his line, and his name is Six, and I wrestled him in 6 days, and Schiavone was very impressed by this line.
That's right. X-Pox. That's going to be his new name.
Speaking of, it just dawned on me watching this show that when you add one... Two and three together, it makes six.
Took him 19 years.
Yeah.
About that.
Yep.
Yeah. And he was the sixth man.
Yeah, that's why I thought they named him
Crazy.
Six. Yeah.
I think that is why they named him that, actually.
That's why they said. But then I added up one, two, and three. I got out my calculator and slide rule. And sure enough, it was six.
I picture you have... One stone in a pile.
Right.
And then two stones in a pile. And if three stones in a pile. So you made one
obscure,
big pile of stones.
I know.
Okay. Let's move on.
And a Rey Mysterio Jr. video package sent to
music.
Some... Yes.
Unbelievable.
Like, it was...
Straight out of a late 80s martial arts movie.
Yeah. It was 1980s rock, but it was almost like an orchestra set to it. Like a guitar solo, but it had a dramatic build to crescendos.
Yeah, it was a martial arts film.
Yes.
Babyface song.
Progressive rock, Babyface, I don't know.
It'd be like Dream Theater.
I actually thought of that, but I was not familiar enough. I went with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
And it works, too.
Yeah.
I went with Bloodsport.
They're not a prog.
These
rock,
are all yeah. wins.
Let's talk about Jimmy Graffiti. I don't want to be here all night.
Jimmy Del Rey.
How is it we cut the shows we watch in half?
I don't know, Vinny.
And somehow you're worried about... So now is the night you're worried about going long.
Well, we have spent 15 minutes on the first 5 minutes of Nitro.
So I'm
and
watching,
it's not even like there's anything to talk about.
So I'm watching this.
And I could talk a lot about Jimmy Graffiti.
Yeah, I can too. So, yes, Jimmy Graffiti comes out on Nitro. I'm looking at this guy. He appears to be the long-lost third member of Public Enemy.
He really did.
He has horrible gear and a bad haircut. And he's about to wrestle Dean Malenko. I'm thinking, what in the hell is this? Where do they find this guy? What's going
to
happen?
You know what he looked like to me? He looked like a man who decided he was going to be one of Public Enemy for Halloween.
Mm. Yes.
However, he was concerned that if WCW found out, they would sue him.
I see.
And so he decided to call himself Jimmy Graffiti.
Yeah. And then they started to wrestle.
Right.
And holy Christ, Jimmy Graffiti was good. He was really, really good.
This was a former, in more ways than one, heavenly body.
That is so true. He was not trim. He was not super lean. but he could go. So I looked it up. I'm assuming the two of you looked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Jimmy Del Rey.
That's right.
The former Heavenly Body.
I already said that.
Yeah. Who apparently just died in December.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
52 years old, heart attack.
I do remember hearing about that now.
My wife used to retch in terror when he would do that shake when he was in the Heavenly Body.
Excuse me, she would retch in terror?
Yeah, that's what I said.
I know your wife.
She would hide her eyes.
Okay, that's okay? Better.
It made her physically ill to watch him gyrate.
He didn't do any gyrating here.
No.
He did. There were points where his hockey jersey would fly up over his gut and he had to pull it back down. So as noted, he was not the picture of bodybuilding health, but God, this guy was good.
He was also in the ring, Vinny, with Dean Malenko, who is the new best wrestler of the 90s.
I can't argue with that.
Another guy I underrated at the time. I always knew he was good, but I didn't realize just how great this man was. He was unbelievable.
He was
I believe
tremendous.
I say that every week. Speaking of redundancy.
So Graffiti made a comeback. He went up top. He tried a missile dropkick.
Yes.
Dean countered it, caught him in a powerbomb, hooked the cloverleaf for the win.
He learned something from the first match. If I can hit this missile dropkick, I'll beat Dean Malenko.
That's right.
What was most notable about this match was fake Sting was shown in the crowd. And Larry saw him and said, "It's Stink."
He sure did.
It was with the New World Order.
Shivani called him out on this, and he explained it. Yes, you see.
Can you imagine if he would have said, "It's Stink," and Tony would have said, "Larry, you're wrong."
That, I'd have died.
I literally would have died. I would be dead right now.
It's Stink.
If that would have happened.
It's Stink, and he's wrong. Diamond Dallas Page versus Craig Pittman. My favorite part of this was Pittman makes his entrance, and
yes,
Page is doing that thing where he slouches in the corner with his arms on the ropes, and Pittman like turns to the crowd and salutes them, and he turns to Page and gives him the best stink eye of all time.
See, I thought you were going to go with Diamond comes out with his generic Nirvana music, and then Craig Pittman comes out, and there's massive amounts of pyro.
Yes.
Fireworks.
Yeah.
For Pittman.
For American Pittman. Hero.
Sure.
Every day is the 4th of July for Craig Pittman.
None for Dallas.
All I know.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's this thing that WCW does. Kind of like that Bobby Eaton storyline. Like, who could possibly care? It is so amazing to see the slow build storyline.
Yes.
About Nick Patrick and Teddy Long.
They just keep arguing.
This has been going on forever. You watch Raw nowadays, and even slow build storylines are over in 3 weeks. This has been going on forever. The only one close is Sherry and Colonel Parker.
Mm-hmm. That's
another storyline no one could possibly care about.
Yeah, so we'll get to the chase. Page one with the diamond cutter. Okay, we're good?
That's it.
All right.
Oh, there was the Nick Patrick stuff.
Shivani then interviewed Nick Patrick, who again denied being the NWF referee.
He did the same promos last week, just shorter.
It was. The funniest spot was, Page uses a neutralizer, like Cesaro uses, and he makes a cover, and Pittman kicks out, and Page, who remember was 6'5 and 270 or so, goes flying in the air and lands on Patrick's back. So now the guy has a neck brace and a bad back.
What I got out of this is Patrick is talking to Shivani because Shivani is accused of being the NWO referee, and Patrick does the same line about, "I'm in much better shape than that man."
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, "You shouldn't be making these accusations, Tony, because we all know what happened to the last guy that made these accusations." All I could think was, no, we don't. We have no idea where Gene Okerlund went. It's never been explained. He just vanished. The answer is his contract expired. He'll be back soon.
Well, there you go. They show the NWO laying out Ric Flair backstage 2 weeks ago. And then Jeff Jarrett calling out the Giant in Flair's place. Said Flair will be due for shoulder surgery soon.
True.
Jeff Jarrett versus Ron Studd.
This was great because Jarrett is facing the Giant at Halloween Havoc.
Yes.
And so he faced another Giant here.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen Ron Studd on Nitro 3 times. All 3 times, he's been wrestling someone who's about to have a match with the Giant. And then he lost.
You know what?
He He's a 7-foot TV jobber.
All three times, he's been carried to a decent match.
I timed this match.
This was okay.
It was fine.
It went 129.
It was a fine 129.
I'm sure if I had a 7-foot man who was passable, I could find something better to do than have him lose on TV every week.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he was passable. He had a minute 29 with Jeff Jarrett, which was passable. And the other great match he had was with Chris Benoit.
I'm trying to remember. There was a middle
who
one.
Could get a great match out of you.
Probably Randy Savage, who was also great.
Yeah.
I see your point. So before the match, Flair comes out, and he wants to make sure that Jarrett is worthy of taking a spot. And his method of determining Jarrett's worthiness is to measure his strut.
Sure.
So for like 5 minutes, they just take turns strutting back and forth.
This is why Ric Flair is not at the Performance Center.
This is what he would teach people?
Yeah.
Which I'd be fine, by the way.
Oh, you want to give ZZ a job? Let me have him for a while.
Strutting 101.
ZZ, show me your strut. All right, he's out.
Can you imagine Ric Flair teaching Enzo Amore to strut?
No.
I can't either, but I bet it'd be awesome. So they go back and forth a while, and it's funny because at first the crowd loves them both, but then they decide and they love Ric Flair more. A reasonable decision. But they love Ric Flair more, and so they're going to boo Jarrett because he is not Ric Flair.
Makes sense.
But eventually, Flair decides he likes what he sees, and they go to face-to-face for a bit, and somebody, I think it was Larry, says they're going to check to see who has the bigger nose. And Flair shakes Jarrett's hand, and he leaves, apparently approving of his replacement.
Hell of a vertical suplex during this match.
Oh, jeez.
Jarrett suplexed the 7-foot man.
And held him up.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like a snap suplex.
It was not like he just flipped him over and let gravity take over. He powered the 7-footer up.
All right, now I know a lot of you are mad at me for my decision to remove the current Raw report, but I'm asking for a favor. Can anyone provide me with Jeff Jarrett's WCW music? This is my favorite music in wrestling right now. All I want to do is watch Jeff Jarrett wrestle and win so I can hear his victory music.
Sure.
I search for it on YouTube, and all that comes up is his horrendous, slap nuts, chosen one, Kid Rock ripoff music, which sucks.
Was that worse than his TNA song?
Oh, by a billion miles.
Okay, then.
I mean, they're both terrible.
I remember he had a Kid Rock ripoff song, but I don't remember the actual song itself. And I agree this music is much better. So Schiavone then interviewed Jarrett. Jarrett's talking about history and respect, and the whole time he's talking, the fans are looking over to the side, like, what's going on? What was going on was Ric Flair came back. Because Ric Flair's a better promo than Jeff Jarrett. He's also a better wrestler than Jeff Jarrett, but he had a bad shoulder. So Flair takes over and goes crazy, and he's ranting about how the NWO fought dirtier than the Horsemen, and that's what really pissed him off. He's going to take himself out of surgery to be in Jarrett's corner against the Giant of Vegas. And he cuts this promo on behalf of Jarrett. Everyone's happy, and they cut to the stands where Giant is up there just watching. That is so unapologetically a ripoff.
Says right there, that's Jeff Jarrett's 6th WCW theme. 6th!
Try his first.
It's not up here.
Oh. So someone out there is aware that he had 6 themes, but didn't put 1 through 5 up?
Maybe they didn't have them.
He only put that one?
Could be.
That is terrible. I'm sincere when I say this. This next segment was my favorite part of the show.
Absolutely.
I would like to mention, by the way, that Flair's promo was unbelievable. Unbelievable. Thank you.
I smiled so big when I got done watching this next match.
And it's amazing, because when I tell you who was wrestling here, you would think this is fast-forward material.
I marked out.
I did too.
It was awesome.
You see, Lex Luger wrestled a man named Roadblock.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the story of the Rochester Roadblock?
I know this is him.
Do you know the story?
No. Apparently,
okay.
Apparently not.
In 1987, Rochester Roadblock decided he wanted to be a wrestler. And apparently he went to a local show that was being headlined by Hulk Hogan versus the One Man Gang.
Explains a lot.
And somehow, he caught up with the Hulkster, and he begged and pleaded for him to train him or something. I don't know. And the Hulkster blew him off. So that night, Rochester is in the crowd, and the main event begins. And the Rochester Roadblock jumps the barricade.
Oh no!
Gets in the ring, takes down the one man gang. He's trying to put a beating on him before security shows up and drags his ass out of there. That is how he got into the business.
I had never heard that before.
That it is works. A true story.
Everybody do it.
That's right. Everyone find the one man gang and beat him up.
He's in a grave, isn't he?
I don't think so.
No, the Roadblock is still alive.
No, I'm talking about the gang.
The gang.
Gang's dead, right?
He was at least around to wrestle Larry Sweeney. And I realize Larry Sweeney has also left us. But have you ever seen the Larry Sweeney one-man gang strut off? It was better than Jarrett and Flair.
The one-man gang is alive.
Yes.
I apologize, Mr. Gang.
So let's talk more about Roadblock.
Let's.
Parents, Mr. and Mrs. Block, had a son, named him Road. He comes out.
Well, they named him Rochester.
Not here.
His middle name was Road.
as of this show, as a WCW viewer, all I know is his name is Road Block. He comes out. He is a very large human being.
It's like you took Balls Mahoney, packed on 50 more pounds, and then shot him up another 8 inches.
He is about 6'6" or so.
Yeah.
Are you aware, by the way, that one-man gang once was known as Crusher Broomfield?
No.
That's a great name. Go on.
So Roadblock, he does, facially, and with the hair, he resembles a even fatter Balls Mahoney a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And as noted, he was quite tall. This man is easily 400 pounds.
Easy.
And he comes out, and his gimmick is, you know, he's a Roadblock.
Right.
So he's carrying
a barricade.
A road barricade over his shoulders.
Right.
For no reason.
Right.
I don't know what he was going to do with it at some point, but he's got it. He's got this barricade.
If there was a drink spilled, he would be Johnny on the
no
spot.
No one stand with, here
right,
where I'm putting the Roadblock.
Right. Do not slip and fall, fans.
His singlet, from the waist up, it is orange and white,
mm-hmm.
like a reflective safety vest.
Much like the aforementioned barricade.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yes. From the waist down, it is black with yellow stripes.
No. Only up the inside of the thigh or the stripes. On the outside, single
dotted
solid lines.
There's parts of it yellow lines, parts dotted white lines.
Right.
Like a road.
He was a his
that's
thighs,
the gimmick.
His thighs and his calves were a 3-lane highway.
Yeah, yeah. So he comes out to do this match, and they start wrestling, and for a long time, it is two big, clumsy glutes clobbering each other,
mm-hmm.
and it's sloppy and not very good. We get an Arn Anderson inset promo. He vows. He says he knew Lex was able to say, "I quit. I heard it with my own ears." He said, "I'm going to make you say I quit again." So they go back to the match. And Roadblock is working over Luger. He goes for a powerbomb. And I don't know what happened. But I would like to think, and I believe this is totally believable to me, that Roadblock set Luger up for this powerbomb, and Lex said, "Fuck you, I'm not taking a fucking powerbomb." And so Roadblock let him go and whipped him under the ropes and hit a terrible clothesline.
This match was incredible.
It was amazing to behold. So they go to the finish. Lex is running wild. He power slams the big man. He pops up to his feet. He starts doing that pose with his pecs where he says, "I'm going to rack this fucker." The crowd's going nuts. And he goes to rack the 400-pound man. And he gets him halfway up. And he almost gets him. And then he slips out. And Roadblock collapses to the mat.
Drops him.
Everyone's heartbroken. And Lex has, "I'm going to give it another try." And he picks the big fella up. And he goes for the rack again. And he almost has it. And he drops him again. And Roadblock slips off and falls to the mat. I don't know if that was their plan.
It was not their plan.
No.
It looked, because I don't think either one of them, frankly, is creative enough to have thought of this. But when he tried and failed, and I thought, just hit him with a forearm and pin him, dude.
Mm-hmm.
But Lex said no.
Lex puts his hands on his hips. He looks around at all of the fans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He shakes his head, partly in disappointment in himself,
Right.
And partly disappointed that this fucker is so fat. And then he says, one more time.
That's right.
Lex says, I have one thing as a wrestler. It's being very strong. I'm going to lift this man on my shoulders. And he picked him up and he racked this motherfucker.
It was so amazing because he got him up and he was just a tad bit off balance. And as he scooped him over his shoulders, the big man's head and arms and shoulders started to shift and Luger almost lost him, but he took a step sideways and caught him and held him there like a champion.
That's right.
And he could have racked him. The man submitted and he dropped him, but no, he held him there a little longer to show the world, I got this fatty up. The fans go nuts. Eric Bischoff screams.
Bischoff screams. The fans go nuts. I swear to God, I sat in my chair and started pumping my fists back and forth.
Absolutely.
It was such a moment of triumph and vindication. He overcame adversity and he won.
Yeah.
He lifted a fat man.
This was so awesome.
This was the best. Just the best.
Never give up.
Yeah.
This should go in Lex Luger's WWE Hall of Fame ceremony video.
Absolutely.
That was everything I love about pro wrestling right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That right there, that match.
Yes. Lee Marshall called in from Phoenix to talk about the sunset he was watching.
It's all true.
American Males versus Harlem Heat.
Let me talk about this match.
Before you talk about the match, as they're making their entrances, Bischoff is, you know, doing baseball scores and whatever. He mentions the Atlanta Braves. He congratulates the Atlanta Braves on their big win over New York. He pauses and says, we're making that a habit around here. And that line slew Bobby Heenan. And I have been watching Bobby Heenan for almost three decades now. I've seen Bobby Heenan crack up a lot of people. This is the only time I remember somebody else cracking up Bobby Heenan. Heenan thought that line was hysterical. So that's that. Brian, describe the match.
So they come out for this match, and first off, Nick Patrick, our main man Nick Patrick's a referee. He's got a neck brace on again. He raises the belts over his head to display them because of the title match, and suddenly he has to put the belts down.
They're too heavy.
His neck hurts so bad he can't lift the belts over his head. Again, why is this man a referee?
Because WCW, in storyline, is incompetent.
Well, I've been praising Patrick for a long time. It's time to correct the market, so to speak. Heat on Bagwell forever. Hall and Nash are watching. Riggs runs wild. Hot tag. Punches Colonel Parker. Booker T hits his flying kick. Booker T covers Scotty Riggs.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Patrick drops down to count. Now, granted, it's Bagwell's fault. Because Bagwell is supposed to try to jump in, but not get there in time.
I guess.
This idiot cannot time this. He leaps in, and he successfully breaks up the pin. Just as Patrick is counting to three.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I realize it was not Nick Patrick's fault. But how long has this man been refereeing?
Long time.
A long damn time. Nick Patrick counts the pin, and time stops.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Bischoff, who is the man in charge, says, no, that was not the finish. Patrick stands there. He looks at one man. He looks at the other man. Everybody starts to talk to each other. And then Patrick rings the bell.
Yep.
Can you not just make a decision in the heat of the moment? Did you count a pin or not? He stalled, he hemmed, he hawed, and then he finally made a decision. This match, this finish, sucked.
You're right. The only thing is, I'm not entirely sure it was Bagwell's fault.
It was Bagwell's fault. They showed a replay.
Yeah, but the replay was, we'll do this illegal move and make the cover, but no one thought, well, who's going to take out Bagwell? So Bagwell is standing there like, the ref's gotten one, the ref's gotten two. Then he decides, why would I be so stupid to stand here and watch my partner get pinned?
So move a little slower, you idiot.
He didn't even do the gimmick where he, you know, fake got his foot caught, you know, in the
he
rope.
He sold it like he thought it was a shoot.
Yeah.
Like at the last minute, he decided, holy shit, I got to get in there.
Yes.
And then he went as fast as he could, and he screwed it up. This sucked.
It sure did.
The match was great until the finish.
Well, it was great when Booker T and Bagwell were in.
Thank you.
Let's talk about what's really great.
Your new favorite
team.
Yes,
sir.
The Powers of Pain versus The Fantastics on Nitro.
And this was fantastic.
In 1996. Bobby is talking about how Ming and Barbarian's ancestors were cannibals who swung from trees.
Yeah.
1996, everybody. Bischoff sees no hope for the Fantastics. And why would you? Fantastics actually get a comeback on the Barbarian, who has it set up in his mind, I'm not taking no bumps. And if you try, I'm not going to take it.
He barely worked.
They were killed. Ming and Barbarian won.
Dismembered, really.
This ruled. And then when it was over, they announced that, yes, at Halloween Havoc, Ming and the Barbarian are facing Mongo and Chris Benoit. I am more excited for that match than anything at Hell in a Cell. Mm. Anything at any UFC in the foreseeable future. I cannot wait for that match.
The beating that these two men put on two other human beings was awesome.
Yeah, they're the best team ever.
At one point, Ming lifted up Bobby Fulton for a pile driver, and then he hit it, and he was having so much fun, he was visibly giggling.
Just sat there laughing. Just dropped that guy in his neck. I like when Ming backdropped, I'm not sure which one it was, honestly. Fulton stopped dyeing his hair. So he got two brown-haired dudes in there. But Ming backdrops one, and Barbarian catches him for a powerbomb. And when I say catches him for a powerbomb, it's not like he put his hands on his legs and guided him down. No, he caught him and then powerbombed him. That was great. The Fantastics made a comeback. Fantastics, by the way, the oldest men to be a Pretty Boy tag team since we saw Rock and Roll Express in the show like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But their comeback included a solo missile dropkick and a double team missile dropkick. But the Faces of Fear no-sold all this. And then they do the finish. Here's how they won. Tommy Rogers tried a body press on Barbarian. And Barbarian caught him. He's holding them there in essentially, not even body slam position, a follow-away slam position, just holding him horizontal. And Maine comes up from behind him, and he kicks Tommy in the head. And then they pinned him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the finish.
I've been telling y'all forever, best team in the world.
I'm seeing the light.
Thank you.
And before we move on, as long as we are acknowledging tragic passings, Tommy Rogers also passed away just a few months ago here.
Yeah, that's right.
From this point forward, this Nitro got actually very depressing. But that match was great. So Bischoff is talking about exciting information and he's surprised. He's saying the NWO Sting is going to wrestle soon, but we have a surprise. He may as well have said, stay tuned. Sting is going to come out and kick that guy's ass. He apologizes to Randy Savage for showing the disturbing Elizabeth video last week. Then they re-aired the Elizabeth video. It's a hollow apology. He promised another video later to show how low-class Hollywood Hogan was. Mr. JL versus NWO Sting. Most of the NWO came out at ringside to watch. So I'm watching this NWO Sting, and we mentioned this before. He's a really, really big athletic guy. And I realize he went to Japan and worked a lot over there. But once this thing stopped, he disappeared. Was he any good?
He could play a passable fake Sting.
Okay.
But the real Sting was significantly better.
Well, I'm sure that's true. So, anyway, he squashes Mr. JL. He puts him in the Scorpion. And the key is, when he puts him in the Scorpion, his back is to the ramp. That means he can't see when the real Sting comes out. In the first incarnation of the Crow Sting.
That's right. All black.
All black, long black hair, white face paint with the black markings around the eyes.
He actually didn't have long black hair. He had medium length brown hair.
Okay.
Like AJ Styles.
He looked remarkably like AJ Styles.
Yeah.
That's all I could think when I saw him.
All right. And he comes out, no baseball bat. He just beats the holy hell out of NWO Sting. The NWO just watches all this. And Sting goes through all his moves. And he puts NWO Sting, and the fans, by the way, it took them a while to catch on. When he first came out, they didn't recognize Sting, because he didn't have the colorful makeup and the tights and the big muscles. He's just a guy in a trench coat with white face paint. Of course, they caught on for sure when he hit all his moves. And he puts fake Sting in the Scorpion. At that point, the NWO decides, all right, that's enough. And they get in the ring to put a stop to things.
Well, Bischoff is noting that... It's funny because Bischoff is so excited that Sting is in the building. So Sting gets in the ring and he's beating up fake Sting, and Bischoff is stunned that the NWO is not attacking Sting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, so that's your plan? You're just going to let Sting go out there and be eaten alive by all of the wolves? You didn't have backup for Sting?
Like,
what are you expecting to happen, you idiot? He's stunned they don't go after the guy. So now he thinks, oh man, Sting is in black. Maybe he's part of the NWO.
That's right. So they gave him a sales pitch. One by one, they just spoke about the benefits of joining the NWO. He is just standing there, staring intently with a smile on his face, an evil smile on his face. I like when DiBiase says, if you join the NWO, we will treat you like family. 2 minutes after they allowed one of their family members to get killed to prove a point.
Well, you know.
And the week before.
He was replacing that man.
Yep. So Scott Hall says, look, to mess with you, we brought out a bogus imposter. And nobody knows about that better than us. I laughed. So Sting never says anything the whole time. They all make their pitches. And finally Sting says, that's the fake Sting. You get what you pay for. The real Sting may or may not be in your price range, but the only thing for sure about Sting is nothing's for sure. And he walks out, and those are the last words he said in the ring for Lord knows how long.
The WCW announcers were excited that Sting had not joined the NWO. The NWO was very hopeful that Sting was going to join them. They were, in fact, ripping off WWE's their real-life storyline with Brett.
They were, actually.
Sting is Brett.
That is true. And the most forgiving, kind-hearted wrestler in all the world, NWO Sting, he then celebrated with his friends who would let him get killed.
Well, you know, it's part of the plan.
I guess.
He'd be repackaged as NWO... I don't know.
Main event was supposed to be Chris Benoit versus Randy Savage.
Dang it.
That probably would have been a pretty good match.
It would have been way better than what we got for a main event segment.
That's true. Savage comes out, and much like Sting, he is not dressed to wrestle. He is clad head to toe in black leather.
They say it's his street clothes. Let's talk about them. He is dressed head to toe in leather fringe and a black cowboy hat.
If you want to know what he's wearing,
John Lennon glasses.
Go watch Bon Jovi's Dead or Alive, the video. He's got John's jacket, John's cowboy hat, and John's leather pants on.
Can we get a more modern reference we could go look up?
Actually, no. No one has worn this outfit since.
True.
Point is.
It's ridiculous.
But it's the Macho Man.
It is.
What do you want, jeans and a t-shirt?
There is literally nothing else I can imagine Macho Man wearing.
No.
He looks like a giant crow.
He's a lunatic in fringe.
Sting was the crow, but Savage looked like a legit crow.
A crow. Not the crow, a crow.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what he was doing there, because he clearly was not going to wrestle, but Bischoff ambushes him again.
Bischoff.
I apologize for last week's video. To make up for it, I have another video.
Yeah.
So what this was, cut to, I guess, Hollywood. They're on the set of Three Ninjas.
Yeah.
And there is Hulk Hogan with hair.
Yes.
Obviously, for this movie, they cannot have a bald Hulk Hogan.
Mm.
They had to put some kind of toupee on him.
And it is true. I have never seen a bald man who was given hair, either through the magic of Hollywood or a hair transplant or whatever, who, after receiving hair, didn't just look older. He looked...
frail.
20 years older.
Yeah.
He looked so ancient. 43 years old.
So he explains that the NWO is taking over production of the movie. The Giant comes over to make sure the director stays out of his way, and now the Giant's the director, and Hogan says he's the producer.
When you listen to Vinny explain this, everybody, just trust me. It's so much worse.
Yes.
This was straight out of Thunder. It was straight out of Nitro.
In Paradise.
Yeah.
It was so bad. This was the worst storyline I think I've seen in the entire time we've been watching the show.
So the gimmick is Hogan is ordering Liz to cut a promo for Savage into the camera and convince the Macho Man that she still loves him, even though it's a lie. Last week, I said that video was the best acting of Liz's career. This
was the worst.
Wasn't.
She was so bad.
So they go back to Hulk's trailer.
She doesn't want to do it, is the key.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to force her to do this video. She doesn't want to do the video. Mm-hmm. Overacting. He sends her back to the trailer. He goes in the trailer to yell at her. Who's filming in the trailer?
I don't know.
There was two cameras in the trailer.
What is happening?
It's a two-camera shoot in the trailer.
I don't know. This was not very good. And finally, Hogan gives up. And so they go back outside the trailer. And now it's just Hogan and Giant being Hogan and Giant cutting a promo into the camera at Savage.
We're supposed to believe that Hulk Hogan is so powerful that he has taken over the production of Three Ninjas Go to Splash Mountain or whatever the stupid movie was. Can you believe that? Think about this.
Yes, actually.
How does this help the movie?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
If you had any interest in seeing this movie and suddenly you see a behind-the-scenes documentary that Hulk Hogan and the Giant have taken over production, and they're shooting videos with Liz, and they mention Liz has a cameo. Think about that.
You see Miss Elizabeth act.
Now you know why no one watches the movie.
You tell her to stand over there and be pretty, and she can't.
Yes.
The storyline was god-awful, and then Hogan promised to see Randy Savage in Vegas.
His big line was, I'm going to go give her some acting lessons, and she's thinking about me, not you. So they go back to the arena. Bischoff says, Randy Savage, your thoughts. just like Devin from NXT.
Who's been fired, by the way.
I know.
Oh.
And Savage doesn't see anything for a long time.
Bischoff says to him, this proves that she's real, no matter what the Hulkster says.
And you could see.
Like, what?
You could see behind Savage's glasses, he's weeping. He's got tears rolling down his face.
I did too when I watched this video.
Yeah, it was that bad.
So Savage stares at the screen for a long time. He's got his sunglasses on, doesn't say anything, and he turns to walk away. Bischoff says, well, I apologize to Chris Benoit, no match for you. Apologize to all you fans, no main event. And then Savage returns. He has something to say.
And Bischoff says, you have thoughts?
Yeah.
Give me your thoughts.
Savage says he has learned that friendships can be fragile. Relationships can be fragile. And Eric, you and I both know business can be fragile. Even marriage.
Even marriage.
Even marriage can be fragile. And Hulk Hogan, life is also fragile. And then he leaves, having apparently threatened to murder a man on live television.
He has threatened to kill Hulk Hogan. That is your go-home angle.
Yes. Everyone tune in Sunday night for Halloween Havoc when Randy Savage, perhaps with a gun or a knife, kills Hulk Hogan.
The go-home show for Hell in a Cell is Brock Lesnar went on Steve Austin's podcast to talk about the size of his truck and guns and how he doesn't give a shit about anything. He just wants to get paid. And here, the go-home for Halloween Havoc is Randy Savage training to kill, end the life of Hulk Hogan. That's serious business.
One of these things is not like the other.
One of these things is not like the other. That is true. It's Nitro, everybody. We have to watch for next week the main event of Halloween Havoc just to see what happens. And we have to watch The Powers of Pain versus Chris Benoit in Mongo.
Can we just watch the finish?
Of the main event?
Yeah.
That's probably fine. I don't care.
I don't think.
But you have to watch the entire Powers of Pain versus Benoit and Mongo.
That's fine.
Sounds unbelievable.
People will freak out if I don't correct you and say they're the Faces of Fear. It doesn't matter.
What did I say?
Powers of Pain.
Powers of Pain?
That's Barbarian's other team.
It's Barbarian Warlord. They weren't as good.
Oh, no.
The Faces of Fear.
Meng was better than the Warlord.
Remember when he got hit by an ice cream truck? I shouldn't laugh. It's so terrible.
The truck just imploded around him?
No, like, he was injured.
Oh, okay.
But can you imagine? You're the Warlord, and you were injured by the Ice Cream Man. I feel terrible.
Remember Ice Cream Johnny B? He's like in Heartland or OVW, and he came out passing out ice cream to the fans.
That'll get you over.
And Ice Cream Man by Van Halen.
I do remember this. Let's play one song and then we'll wrap it up. A new classic.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brock Lesnar!
With a purposeful grimace and a terrible sound, he pulls the spinning high tech. The lyrics are preposterous.
It's about Godzilla.
Buddy. Well, that's it from here. If you'd like to debate whether or not we should bring back Raw next week, you're welcome to do so.
This was a rousing success. This was an excellent show we've done.
All right. Your one vote.
Yes.
Your one
vote. My one
vote
has been heard.
Is tallied.
Craig Proper is with me. Two votes.
Craig, you're...
Right now, it's unanimous.
Second vote is tallied. So I'm going to keep an eye on everything.
Listen.
Hey, Vinny, maybe everyone liked the show, and maybe they say, you know what? It's better without current Raw. We don't need it. Let's wait and see what everybody says.
I just want everyone to know that I was happy on a Tuesday for the first time in 2015 today.
Shouldn't have said this. Go on.
That's all I wanted. That's all I wanted to make that out there.
Okay.
If you like me, you'll vote no more Raw.
I don't think you get it, Vinny. People do like you. But they like you better when you're talking about how much you hate Raw.
Then they don't like me.
No, they do.
No, that's not...
This is redundant. All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up. We'll talk to you again on Thursday with NXT and I don't even know what else.
We'll figure it out.
We'll talk to you again. Just like Raw, we'll figure it out. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Good night.
Life is wonderful.